Hi, everybody. Eric from Hit Subscribe here, and apologies for the slightly janky setup. I'm doing these live streams through Circle, but I'm also recording it on my phone because my webcam is broken. That will be fixed next week, but thank you for bearing with me in the meantime. So the topic of today's stream is the question, how do you deal with the variable income of freelancing? It's a good question. I forget the exact context of this. I'm kind of working my way through a backlog. So let me answer that. Although I'm going to set the stage here and talk about, you know, first about like, what does this mean? So if you're working a full-time job, or maybe you're just starting to freelance, you might be a little confused about the idea of variable income. Like, why does the question asker say that freelancing comes with variable income? The reason for that is really kind of straightforward in a sense. If you are used to working a full-time job where you probably about bi-weekly have money direct deposited into your account, freelancing does not work that way. It can really vary, but a lot of freelancing, especially if you're doing something with a shorter cycle of service delivery, like say you're doing graphic design or something and you might have like, I don't know, 10 or 15 different clients within a month, you will tend to have, sometimes it's called feast and famine cycles, but even if it's not kind of all or nothing that you're getting business coming in, it tends to be not as predictable as like salaried income. So if you are making $52,000 a year, you get $2,000 every 2 weeks put into your checking account. Freelancing doesn't work that way. So 1 month you might have, you know, only $1,000 worth of work that you do for clients. Other months it might be $3,000 or $4,000. It can really vary. So what starts to happen is if you were to plot a graph of your income as a freelancer month to month, it's kind of like a up and down pattern rather than a nice smooth curve. And I'll get into this a little bit more later on here, but the there are ways you can kind of try to smooth that out a bit or just manage it in various ways. So I'm going to take you through how to try to smooth it out, how to get maybe away from all that up and down. But first I'll talk about just dealing with the up and down. If, you know, it is kind of a fact of life. So with any business that you're running, you only have a certain amount of control. Like it's pretty hard to fix a business in place and say, I'm going to earn exactly $2,000 a month. There are very few businesses where you can actually do that. So to some extent, you just have to live with the variability, even if you can control it somewhat. So first of all, I guess I'll tackle this in two different ways. The first one I'll talk about is, or the first thing I'll talk about is managing your own finances as a freelancer. So if we assume a world where the variability is inevitable, how do you accommodate that? How do you deal with the inevitable variability? And then the second part will be kind of toning down the variability, how to make things more controllable and predictable. So in terms of dealing with the variability, if you assume that, you know, maybe 1 month you make nothing and another month you make 5,000, you know, whatever variance on your income you have, the first thing, you know, and especially this will be true out of the gate, like when you have a lot of business and you're maybe turning away business, you have a nice smooth cycle. Usually that's after you've been in business, had your practice, had your business for a while. In the beginning, you're probably going to have a lot of variability. So the first thing I would do is build yourself some runway. If you, before going freelance, you've put 6 months of personal expenses in the bank or a year of personal expenses in the bank, then to some extent, you're not really going to sweat the variability. So even if, you know, the first month or two, you don't make anything, you've almost kind of planned for that. So this is, you know, also heavily related to the way you just might manage like your personal finance if you have a job. And I think the rule of thumb is if you're working a salary job, what is it, like 6 months of expenses you're supposed to have saved in case, you know, you lose your job or whatever. Actually, I could make a decent case that if you are an entrepreneur, a freelancer, business owner, that runway in a sense could actually be smaller, but only if you're established. In the beginning, you want it to be bigger. That's probably a topic for another day. But if you're an established freelancer, you've been at it for years, you're making good money, you don't need that much runway because the overwhelming likelihood is you're never going to lose all of your income, half of it max. So anyway, just getting started, have that runway, and I will say keep that runway. So if when you hang out your shingle and you start your practice, you burn through 3 or 4 months of it, I would, once you start making money again, replenish that to be 6 months or a year or whatever you've started with. If you keep that buffer, then you're, you know, as your practice continues, you're not going to sweat the variability. And eventually, once you're like truly established the way I've mentioned, then you can not worry as much about that buffer, that runway. But definitely in the beginning, that's a great way to manage. So you set a goal to keep like a certain amount of income, just or a certain amount of your expenses, a certain amount of money just sitting there in the bank. And then when you draw down on it, because you have slower months, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. When you have nice months with a lot of extra income, then put that back. But always try to have that buffer so that you're not white knuckling it every time, you're not filling your dance card 1 month. Another thing that I would suggest is start, you know, so in the salary world, I think it's like the most common thing is like biweekly paychecks or maybe twice monthly. Occasionally you might have company that pays employees monthly. Actually, Hit Subscribe does that, just because I've, from the outset, I always reasoned about my income monthly, and we've never actually moved away from monthly paychecks. I do that at some point, but for the moment, it is monthly. And actually, as an entrepreneur or a freelancer, monthly or even quarterly is a good way to reason about income. Biweekly is maybe a little too granular. And what I'm really getting at here is you're going to need to start thinking of your income in maybe larger blocks, because a lot of business cycles happen over the course of a month. So if you're doing some kind of service, you know, maybe you're doing like paid ads management or something for someone, typically you're going to invoice your clients monthly. And you'll collect payments monthly. And there are other activities throughout the course of the business that happen on a monthly basis. Some cases it might be quarterly. Rarely is it weekly or biweekly. That's like kind of too granular for most businesses doing business with one another, the way you will be if you're a freelancer. So when you're looking at business cycles that happen monthly or quarterly, that's also going to be kind of the smallest unit of valuable information about your income. So this is a little abstract, but I guess, you know, to make it a little bit more concrete, if you're kind of looking and saying, how much income did I take in this week? Well, if, you know, say for instance, Hit Subscribe, we typically are doing any recurring invoices monthly or maybe quarterly. We're what, towards the end of the month, the amount of money we've taken in this week of the month, I have no idea what it might be, but it's probably a lot less than it is on average in the first week of the month in net for 30 invoicing. So for Hit Subscribe, if you were to look at the money that the business takes in weekly, you would have a huge spike and then very little comparably, and then a huge spike. So if you're thinking about your income, your business or practice's income, if you space it out to monthly or even quarterly, then the data starts to be less noisy, less up and down. And so if you're thinking about your business in those terms, you can look at historical trends and not worry so much about like, you know, whether money is hitting your bank account right now. So that's really tied in with runway. In order not to be worrying and white knuckling every week, you need some runway in there. So if you start to think of the business monthly and quarterly, that's when you send invoices. You're not worrying too much if your month isn't yet filled up. Looking out at next month, you know, hopefully it will be, hopefully you'll get enough business in there. And then when you're looking back to say, you know, what is my typical monthly revenue look like? You're looking at month over month to have kind of meaningful data on average. Speaking of like looking back at historical data, another big one that I would think about when it comes to the variability of income for a business, especially once you've been in business a year or longer, is keep really accurate historical data. Like make it easy and accessible to look at what your revenue was in a given month and or in a given quarter. Because what can start to happen after a year or two in business is you can actually look back at those monthly or quarterly trends and start to extrapolate to the future. And the reason that this is particularly valuable is in a lot of businesses you have some form of seasonality. So for instance, if you were, you know, say a CPA or a freelance accountant, you would see large spikes in business like February through April, and then kind of a fall off, cool off for the rest of the year. That's what I mean by a seasonal business. So, I mean, and if you don't, that corresponds to U.S. tax time anyway. So imagine that you went into business as a CPA and you went into business in like October, and you were thinking, wow, this is, you know, pretty awful. I make very little money. Yeah, that would probably be true. That's not the best time of year to go into business. But come December, you might get an uptick because people are doing tax planning for year-end taxes. And then you'd really start to see a spike in business in January, February, March. Now, in the beginning, when you have very little data, you might kind of panic because October and November don't look good. Or, you know, if you started in January or February, you might get overconfident because your business is booming. So maintaining historical records lets you kind of even out those months and chart out like an average income that you might have. And furthermore, it kind of like alerts you to seasonality. And when you're alerted to like a seasonality in your business, you can start to, you know, try to do things that offset that. So it's not really a great idea to have all of your business explode in 2 months of the year and then be flat. So you can start to think about, oh, okay, you know, can I run, again, if you're the CPA, can I run some promotional deals to try to get people to do their taxes early? Or maybe I also start to specialize in tax extensions and helping people file over the course of the summer. You start to brainstorm ways to not have so much spike and bust. And that's probably a good segue into the variability, which is what I want to talk about in the second part. But here in this first part, really it was, you know, kind of about managing this on the personal side. So to summarize there, build a lot of runway so that, you know, you don't panic over the ups and downs, and then get really good at reasoning about your income and your revenue monthly or quarterly, and keep really good like historical data. And always be looking back so that you can start to get a feel for what your average income is in a month or quarter, how that varies by season, how it goes up and down. And that will start to let you make decent projections without panicking. So, you know, take our CPA, who's maybe been in business for a couple of years. If in October revenue is really down, that person on the personal side might not bat an eyelash. They still might plan that vacation or, you know, put the money down on a new house. Because they know that historically, even though October is a down month, no big deal, because things start to pick up a little in November, and then they really kick in like December and so on. So having that historical data, having that monthly and quarterly reasoning, and having that runway really lets you kind of weather the storms that may occur in seasonality or ups and downs. So it's really all about predictability and buffer. Now, let's kind of flip into talking about preventing that variability, which I started to a little bit with, you know, like run some specials to get people to buy out a season or whatever the case may be. One way that you have to really kind of cut down on the variability is going to be to flip into staff augmentation mode. Now, this is going up on YouTube. I'll put something up here about this. I've talked about it before. I wouldn't flip into staff augmentation mode. That's really no way to run a practice. You're just becoming kind of a pseudo employee. And if you take on the kind of work where, like, especially those of you who are watching that are software engineers, you know, maybe you go out and instead of getting a job, you take on an indefinite contract as a contract programmer for Megacorp Inc. And you're just doing that for a year or 2 years. That really does cut down on the variable income, but the reason it cuts down on the variable income is you're simulating employment. So you're just going back into a quasi-employment situation. And employment, you know, whatever you may or may not say about it, has a very predictable income pattern, at least until they lay you off and then it goes to zero. But whatever else it is, absent that layoff, it's quite predictable. And this is more or less true for a staff augmentation contractor as well. You're going to go sign on, do contract work for 40 hours a week, and you're going to keep doing that till either they kick you out or you get tired of it. So that is one way to cut down on variable income. It's not the way that I would recommend. You want to kind of fight through the burn of that variability of not taking on long-term open-ended engagements and then come out the other side with more predictability. But in a pinch, if you really can't suffer the variability anymore, you could sign on for an open-ended engagement that occupies the majority of your time. Or if you at least want to try to keep the lights on from a business development perspective, maybe you could do one for 20 hours a week or 30 hours a week, which would create like a steady kind of base of income while you try to fill up your dance card with other things. So another thing that I would say kind of along these lines, if you want to create some more stability in your income, more predictability, minimize the variance, is you can start to think about what sort of things you could offer that you could do in parallel. So think about shortening the scope of an engagement. If an engagement is something that you can execute in, like, say, a day, what you could do is stretch that out that you execute it over the course of a week or two, and then you could do a bunch of those at once. So to, you know, kind of go back to the beginning, what I was talking about, if you're maybe doing graphic design, you can probably handle creating collateral assets. You know, say you do and specialize in graphic design for like white papers or ebooks or something, you can probably juggle, you know, 5, 6, 10, I don't know how many of those in parallel. So if you can service a lot of business in parallel, then you're not dealing with a situation the way you would be if, say, your business was like doing custom website builds. If you're doing custom website builds that take you 2-3 months, kind of hard to do those in parallel. You can maybe be doing 2, maybe 3 of those at once. But to some extent, they're going to take up a lot of your time for a while, and then you're going to roll off and be, you know, scrambling to find the next one. But if you can do a lot of things in parallel, it gets a little bit easier to bring in and do business while business rolls off. You have like more options to manage. If you really can't do things in parallel, like maybe training would be a good example of this, what you can do instead is, yeah, I can probably only do one on-site training at once, but it's the kind of thing that tends not to be really urgent and people are happy to plan out in advance. So if you're running a training business, you can look out at the next 6 months. So I'm recording this on May 26th. You can look out at June through the end of the year and start to pencil in people for, you know, the last week in July or the third week in October. So having the sort of business that you can book and firm up well in advance is another good way to cut down on the variability of income. Because really, you're just kind of playing this game of calendar Tetris where you're trying to fill up the rest of your year. Now, both of these things require some pretty tight fixed scope. So one is fixing the scope. You can't do it in parallel, but you can, you know, project out that it will take a week or whatever by definition. Another one is, you know, maybe nobody wants to wait 6 months for assets, graphical assets on an ebook, but you can handle a lot of those all at the same time. Whatever you're doing, the key really is to break down your work in ways that you can really be handling a lot of different clients at once. If you think of your book of business as a pie, the more slices there are in the pie, the easier it gets to be to shuffle things around. And through the game of, you know, I don't know, large numbers, but like enough numbers, you start to be able to really kind of manage the workload a lot better with a lot more granularity is the key there. So if you're, you know, over the course of a year, if you're serving 100 clients, it's really easier to massage that in such a way that you're, you know, or call it 120 clients for easy math. It's a lot easier to massage that in such a way that you're doing 10 per month. If on the other hand, you're only serving, you know, 4 clients over the course of a year, you're really going to have to try to find a way such that you're working with all of them in 3 month blocks. And that's tough to do. So generally, look for ways to break down the scope of work so that you can manage it in more granular fashion. And another thing that you could do is think of ways to generate kind of what's called recurring revenue. So maybe you have some kind of offering, or at least part of what you're doing in your business is to offer some sort of service that you can do, and it's, you know, $1,000 a month or something. So if you get clients that are signing up for your services, and you can pencil several of them in at $1,000 a month, and you don't have to keep reselling, but they keep working with you, that's another great way to create a lot of predictability. So the model there might be something, this is probably like what people who are doing paid ads, for instance, do, is say, you know, I'm going to fill up, like I can serve 10 clients in this style of business at the same time. So I'm going to charge $1,000 a month, and I'm just going to try to, like, you know, book myself up until I'm at capacity with those clients. So penciling in revenue each month, all of these are patterns. All of these are variations on how to serve more business and to make it more predictable and malleable and granular. Because the real key here is you need to find a way to work with more clients, more customers. And that's what really creates predictability and cuts down on the variability. So I guess to, you know, recap those three that I sort of wandered through off the cuff, one would be to create very granular scope that you can juggle in parallel. Another would be to create sort of fixed monthly recurring scope that you can pencil in pretty easily. And yet another one would be to create the kind of things you can schedule well in advance, like, you know, on-site trainings. So some combination of those or individual ones of those is a great way to create more variability, more granularity, and thus better predictability to, you know, manage the amount of revenue you're going to bring in month over month. So in terms of, or, you know, beyond just how you scope your work, another great thing that you can do is have a good marketing and sales apparatus. And maybe you kind of build out some lead time in your marketing and sales apparatus. So what I mean is, if all you're doing to bring in business is getting referrals via word of mouth or something, that's just going to pop whenever it pops. You have no control over it. But if you're, let's go back to the training business. If you have a training business where you're teaching people to, you know, do like Rails applications, like you go into companies and you teach their engineers there, you know, maybe you create some specialized thing where you're taking people that used to be doing Java and like enterprisey stuff, and you're like training them how to do Rails. So you train enterprise Java developers in Rails. What you can start to do, instead of just waiting for the phone to ring and then you have business, you know, you can book these trainings well in advance. So you can put together a website, you can start creating content about Rails. And what'll start to happen is, if you're bringing people on as followers, if they're reading your blog post, they're coming in through the search engine, they're following you, maybe finding you on social media, maybe you're doing a video channel, you're going to build this like orbit of people who consume your content. And some fraction of them might be interested enough to tell their boss about you at a company. So some fraction of those people are going to work their way down your funnel into being leads. What you can then do is define a sales cycle where maybe you have a discovery call, and then a week later you do a proposal with them or something like that. What you can do is define these points where somebody is making their way from being somebody who's heard of you to a lead, to a sales conversation, to you write a proposal. All of that lead time between them hearing about you and working their way into being a customer, if you're able to externalize it and make it less work and set expectations like milestones, that gives you a lot of control over booking out future business. And what I mean is this, like imagine that somebody is working in some company and they hear of you and your Rails training and they tell their boss about it. Their boss reaches out through your site and gets an automated email that says, hey, great, I'm really glad you're interested. Here's how to book a meeting with me. And maybe in that automation, you put 3 or 5 business days worth of lead time before they're able to book with you. Then when you have that initial call where you hear about them, what they're doing, et cetera, you set expectations and say, you know, I like to do some recon between initial discovery and doing a proposal call. So our next call is going to be a week from now. And then after that next call, you say, okay, you know, I'm going to take all the rest of this and write a formal proposal. That takes a week. Now, maybe you don't want any of this to take a week. Maybe you want to fast track this. That's fine. But setting that expectation that the sales cycle from first call to like proposal in hand is going to be 3 weeks gives you a lot of ability to slow walk if you're busy, or to really speed it up, you know, if you really need to get something on the calendar. And you could always tell the prospect like, hey, you know, I had some extra time, so I accelerated this process. But if you build in that kind of accordion variability of sales and marketing cycle, you can, without having customers just waiting, getting impatient, you can actually exert a good bit of control over how quickly or how slowly you might book them. And then with that training business, booking up your own calendar and saying, all right, let's get you penciled in for 2 months from now, just adds to that flexibility. But the point is, if you're taking more control over your sales and marketing process, if you're getting more inbound interest in, if you're kind of automatically qualifying and disqualifying business, that's another great way to have more people who want to work with you than you can service. And that in turn is a great way to manage the variability. So if you think of yourself, your practice, your business as having some capacity, getting more people knocking at the door than you can service is a great way to, you know, basically not only get away from the variability, but get away from the variability at the absolute max that your business can handle. And that is kind of the best of all worlds. So that is how you deal with this variability in my world. Hopefully that's helpful. So I guess to recap, the first thing you want to do is on the personal side, just make sure you can withstand ups and downs and start to think about what you're doing in monthly or quarterly increments so that you're not panicking and so that you can look at patterns and do better planning over the course of time. And then finally, you're going to want to get away from income variability. You can put a damper on it by having a good sales and marketing, you know, a predictable process, and by having the kind of work that you can slot in and service more customers than you would if you were just doing kind of like custom tunnel focused one-off. So get a lot of customers, get the ability to handle a lot of customers, generate a lot of demand so that you can be picky about your customers, and you'll get away from that variability and actually have a pretty, you know, predictable level of income, which is, I think, what everybody would like. So hopefully that makes sense. Thanks for watching, and I will catch you next time.